Blog Talk Radio.
Boycotting, and what are they boycotting? They're boycotting the
doing any type of security for her shows. Normally, oftentimes, when you have these large musical concerts, obviously you have police protection. Now, if the police are saying that they're going to boycott, I'm all for boycotting. No issue with boycotting. People boycott different shops. People boycott Chick-fil-A. They decide that people decide they're not going to go. People boycott now. There's a whole thing with Barilla Pasta. The CEO of that company has come out with some things against gay people, LGBT community. Both sides, you know, conservative, liberal, you can boycott whatever you want. It gets a little interesting when you start having companies doing the boycotting, or in this case, public institutions. Now, these are people that we pay with our tax money. So police are saying that they will not work for Beyonce. Well, I guess they can do that. I have no problem with them. She's going to be taken care of. She has. So in Miami is the one. Miami Fraternal Order of Police has voted to have all law enforcement officers boycott concert. And this is on April 26th in the Miami baseball stadium. Okay. So they decide that they're not going to work. Now, what's the reason? The reason why is because she used the Super Bowl to divide Americans by promoting the Black Panthers, and her anti-police message shows how she does not support law enforcement. What? Black Panthers is... I talked about this about a little over a week ago. The police officers now are being ignorant, because they don't understand why the Black Panthers even became a item in the 1960s. Why did they even become the Black Panthers movement? It's because people were being shot and killed in the streets. So the Panthers took it upon themselves to arm themselves for their own protection and to walk the streets observing the police. Now, this is the 1960s, so we didn't have this old, you know, you can conceal and carry, and you know, NRA was supporting people having their arms, Second Amendment. That wasn't the fact then, because these were black faces that were holding guns. So then the governor of California, a man by the name of Ronald Reagan, actually passed a law, the Mulford Act, to disallow people from carrying guns in public. So that's the reason why they carry guns. Now, Panthers for some, and there was just a wonderful PBS special on a week ago that showed exactly what was going on in regards to the Black Panthers and what they were doing in the community and how they were slandered by people like J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI. That PBS special went over so well. In fact, I hear now that Bette Midler is trying to get the president, President Obama, to pardon any Black Panthers that are still in jail for crimes committed at that time. So the police department can go right ahead. They didn't like the video, the formation video that shows scenes of a young black boy dancing in front of a police in riot gear. Oh, my goodness. A black boy dancing in front of police in riot gear who signaled their surrender by putting their hands up. Oh, hands up, don't shoot. Well, we can't have that, because that takes us back to Michael Brown and Ferguson. And we've already discussed that. These police have an issue with anyone putting their hands up saying, don't shoot, because goodness knows, oh, they never shoot anyone that's unarmed. So that's fine. That's fine. If the police have every right to boycott, and they want to boycott all of her concerts, so it's just not the one in February, only the one in Miami in April, but any and all of her concerts all across the country. I say, let's go right ahead. Go right ahead. She will have no issue with getting protection at her concerts. Try anything, hopefully, police department. Don't cause any problems. If you're not going to work the concerts, please don't make any difficulties. Please do that. And this is, it's silly. You're not going to prevent her from holding any concerts because you don't want to work them because of her Super Bowl halftime show and her video, the formation video. Well, look at it. Go look at it online and see if you can find out what would so anger the police. And you know, the statement that the Miami Fraternal Order of Police put out, they really, really, really go into the whole Michael Brown hands up, don't shoot, using the witness that was interviewed by investigators that said that there was no hands up. And my issue with the whole Dennis Wilson and whether he told the truth or not, he didn't have to say anything for 2 weeks after the shooting. We never heard a statement from the officer for 2 weeks after until the shooting. 2 weeks it took him to say anything. So I'm not going to believe anything that was said, because if it takes you 2 weeks to bring out the truth, that's not the truth. And they've somehow, these police, there was a spate of police killings in the last, not this past week, but 2 weeks ago. There was four or five officers shot and killed around the country. South Dakota, Georgia, Maryland, Colorado. I think there was two in Maryland. Somehow they're relating that to Beyonce. They're pinning that on her. The reason there was these police killings was because of Beyonce. Are you kidding me? That's just, it doesn't, and they're even saying that these officers, who, one of the officers who was shot was killed by a Black Panther? Has that been proven? Do we know that? So, I don't know exactly where they're going with this. Have the boycott. She will continue to have the concerts. I don't think the concerts will be endangered in any way. But just a lot, and in fact, you're kind of bringing more attention to her. But if you can make your point that it's somehow horrible for them to dress up in black leather and commemorate the 50th anniversary of Black Panthers at a Super Bowl, and somehow, oh my goodness, she put her hands up referencing Michael Brown, and we've already proven that that was wrong, and did, the officer was right in shooting him in his back as he staggered toward the officer. Move on. This Uber killing over the weekend, or killings by an Uber driver. I have not used Uber or Lyft, any of those, the new taxi services that are out there. But this man in Kalamazoo, Michigan, in the course of the evening, he shoots people. He picks up a few people for Uber, takes them where they need to go, drops them off, shoots a few more people, picks up a few more people. To the point that there was a guy that asked him, hey, are you the shooter? Because, I mean, this was over, 5-6 hours. Shot some people, picks up some people. Shot some more people, picks up some more people. Now it's in the news, and someone, one of the passengers asked, hey, are you the shooter? Oh, no, I'm not that guy. Six people died. So that's not great PR for the Uber. Certainly won't make me want to be a passenger in one of their cars, because you're really literally taking people off the street. I mean, taxi is one thing. These are people that pretty much are doing this as their job. I mean, obviously, second job could be, but I would say that there is more consistency in the hiring of a taxi driver than there are these people Uber, who can literally, you know, I've gotten the emails, you know, you want to Uber? Would you like to make some extra money? You're literally picking up these people off the street, and obviously witnessing this tragedy over the weekend, anyone could do it. And that's sad. This gentleman, you know, he's alive. And actually, there were six people killed. There was actually a seventh that was thought to have died, a young, I think a 14-year-old girl. They were literally going to give her last rites. She was getting ready to be given last rites. They pronounced her dead. And she squeezed, I believe, her mother's hand. So she's at this point, she's hanging on. Hopefully she'll make it. But just a really terrible tragedy. It's crazy how these things happen. And this is another example of domestic terrorism. Thank goodness this person wasn't named Hakeem al-Salam or Jesus Ortiz, who had come across the border illegally. This would have been, and it is a huge story, it would have been a much huger story. This is domestic terrorism. Absolutely domestic terrorism. Another case. Homegrown, right here. Uber. Let's get into the politics. Happier stories. Talk about the Republicans. Fun stuff. The South Carolina primary, Donald Trump showed his power again. He won the race pretty much comfortably. I would say, I think it's about 10 points. It was 35% to 22%. Rubio and Cruz both had 22%. There's about 1,000 votes separating them. Here's the issue with Trump, Donald Trump. Are there going to continue to be five, six people in the race? Jeb Bush came out of the race this week. He finally decided he can't do it anymore. It just wasn't his year. Bush fatigue. Donald Trump has taken over. The Republican Party, the voters in the Republican Party are mad about the choices they have made the last 10 years. Let's go back to the mid-2000s. They were mad about the war in Iraq. They really were. But they kept voting in the Republicans. They were mad about the spending that George W. Bush did, President Bush did, but they kept voting them in. And when President Bush finished his 2 years and John McCain was running for the office in 2008, the anger of the American people writ large elected a person by the name of Barack Hussein Obama. And all those Republicans who were so mad at Bush but kept quiet because there was a Republican in the Oval Office, vented their anger by the summer of 2009. And if you recall, that's when we started seeing these people at town hall meetings discussing the potential of a health care bill, getting up, yelling and screaming and having their guns. And there were people getting together on the Washington, D.C. malls and people carrying their guns and against the president and all the type of ugliness that started with the type of signs and placards that were being shown. You started to see the anger against this president for what the previous president had done. It was the previous president that spent outside of his means, tax cuts, and not putting the wars in on the budget. But they didn't get mad at him. They got mad at the new president who was elected. And that anger carried right into the 2010 elections. The ACA Act got signed in the spring of 2010. And then in the fall of 2010, Congress changed. Republicans took over the House and the Senate. Tea Party became the name of the land. You heard all about the Tea Party. You Lie, screened out in Congress back in 2009. And you started seeing the anger and the hate directed toward this president, President Obama, for things that happened with the previous president. And all this anger, and they felt like they were going to win. They were absolutely going to beat President Obama in 2012. There was just no doubt. He was just going to go down. He was going to be a one-term president, and it didn't happen. Mitt Romney and his 47%, he was an absolute joke, and they lost. Although during that night, the night of the election, they were sure he was going to win. We lost. And then 2014, the next midterms, again, the Republicans won more seats in the House. Actually took over the Senate. Actually, they didn't take over the Senate in 2010. They took over the House in 2010, took over the Senate in 2014. And then now they believe that this anger from the electorate has brought about Donald Trump, a non-politician, who hasn't given us any type of idea of what he wants to do other than he wants to make America great again. Now, for someone like myself, a black male, when I hear someone wants to make America great again, I have to think, what make America great again? When? From where? What year do we want to go back to? It was like during the Reagan era, you would hear this phrase, we want to go back to the good old days. Literally, the good old days. They wanted to go back to the good old days. And in the 1980s, I'm thinking, what good old days are we going back to? Where are we going back? I don't know of any good old days that I would go back to that would keep can I go back to the good old days and maintain my freedom? So this cold that Donald Trump is using, because he's not giving you any plans, he's not being specific, and if he continues on, which I am questioning, because right now we have so many people in the race, it's down from the 17 that it was at, but now we're down to Trump and Rubio, Cruz, and Carson, and Kasich. Kasich is hanging around there on the edges. He's trying to win a few of the northern Midwest states, since he's the governor from Ohio. That maybe at some point before the end of March, we can find out if Trump can win a one-on-one battle, because I need to see if he can get over 40%. He hasn't proven that yet. Who is Trump's? Where is he the second choice? So Jeb Bush is now out of the race. His 8% are gone. Are any of those Jeb Bush supporters, was their second choice Donald Trump? I don't think so. I really highly. Not as much as he criticized Jeb Bush, I'd have find it hard to believe that their second choice, well, if Jeb's not in this race, I think I'll go to Trump. Don't see it. So he's now out of the race. So his 8% are going to go to Rubio. You would almost have to assume most of it would go to Rubio. They're both from Florida. They've known each other. They're good friends. Marco said nice things about them Saturday night. And that's the other thing. So Donald Trump wins the South Carolina primary, and you would think Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio also won. They both gave victory speeches. They won. Ted Cruz won the Iowa caucus, hasn't won anything since. Marco Rubio has not won anything. Not a caucus, not a primary yet. And each time after the voting is over, he comes out and he's talking like he just won the race. He's got to win something. So maybe part of Jeb Bush's votes will go to Rubio. And tomorrow night is a caucus for the Republicans. So it's in Nevada. It's going to be a caucus. Which, it's for me, it's kind of hard to say if it's a real true test of people's vote. To me, it's still, the vote is when you go to the polls, you make your choice. You know, I don't want to see voting become mandatory in this country. I think it's your right to vote. You should exercise it. And if you can get people to come out to vote for you, I think that's the truest test of your viability as a candidate. If you can get people to come out on Tuesday from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., can you get the people to come out to vote for you? As opposed to we're going to meet at 5 o'clock and all be in a big room, and if you're for Trump, you're on this side. If you're for Rubio, you're on this side. Then we'll count up the numbers. Caucus, I'm just not a caucus person. And they've had issues with how it's being counted. And did the person, you know, the first one in Iowa with the Democrats, they still don't know who won. 4 years ago with the Iowa Republican caucus, it took them 2 weeks to get the actual winner. At first they said it was Romney, I believe, and then it came out to be that it was Santorum. Rick Santorum was the actual winner once they counted all the votes correctly. Jeez, come on. Can't pick a president that way. So for me, Trump's challenge is to get to 40. I need to see him get to 40%. Can he get to 40? Whose votes is he going to take? Rubio and Cruz are not going to leave the race. I don't see them leaving the race. Now, Carson may be the next one to go. I think Kasich is going to hang around. Carson may be the next one to go. Who are his voters going to choose if they don't choose Carson? Is it Cruz? Is it Rubio? Trump? Probably a mixture of both. So, but if the Republicans don't decide, if they don't get this field down to two or three people, Trump, Rubio, Cruz, I think Trump is going to just continue taking 35% and having the biggest piece out of five or six people in the race. And it looks like he's got a pretty good shot of sweeping the South. He just won South Carolina the other day, and the way that they broke up the delegates to the convention there was that the winner gets 59 delegates to the convention. And then it is broken up proportionally based on who won the congressional districts, all the congressional districts of the state. Well, Donald Trump won every congressional district. He swept the whole thing. And you still see Rubio and Cruz come out at the end acting like they won the race. They haven't done anything. So right now, I don't see any way right now that the Republicans are stopping him from winning. Cruz has the best shot, but he needs to win Texas. And right now, it looks like Trump is in the lead even in Texas. He's sweeping the South right now. He really is sweeping the South. And he's sweeping it on a very simple message. Make America great again. He has no plans that have any numbers attached to them. And he's winning on a very, very flimsy speech. But he's done it over and over and over again. And it's going over. People love it. So, you know, what can you say? And like I said, in terms of Jeb Bush, just wrong year, Bush fatigue, your brother got us into a bad war, he overspent, you're the third Bush. No, you know, now if it had been flipped, if Jeb Bush would have run in 2000 and things would have happened and whatever, you did your two terms, and if George W. was trying to run this year, he would have been laughed out. It would have been enough. They've just been not very good stewards of the country when the Republicans have been president, the last two Republican presidents, and that is the Bush family. George H.W., I mean, face it, whatever you want to say about him, whether you think he did a great job with Desert Storm back in the early 1990s or not, he was at 91% after that war in early 1991. But by the next year, he couldn't be reelected president of the United States. And yes, there was a third party at the time, Ross Perot, but he lost to Bill Clinton. And then George W. Bush took us into two wars, didn't know what he was doing, gave us conflicting reasons why we were in the wars, couldn't settle on one, never found weapons of mass destruction. And people got tired of him, and they took out their anger, the so-called Tea Party. We didn't know they were Tea Partiers in 2006 and 2007 and 2008. Only after we elected President Obama did we then know what they were called, Tea Partiers. So now, with the Tea Party in firm control of the Republican Party and being behind not only Donald Trump, but Ted Cruz, an anti-politician, if you've ever seen one. In some ways, he's scarier than Donald Trump. The Tea Party has control of the party. They finally took control. I thought it was going to happen in 2010. It took a few more years. They are not going to elect a John McCain moderate. They're not going to elect a Mitt Romney moderate. They're not going to elect, this time, a Bob Dole moderate to be the nominee of the Republican Party. It's not going to happen this time. So John Kasich, it's not going to happen. The only thing Marco Rubio has in his favor is that there is a certain group of Republicans that want that. They want what the Democrats had. They want the new, fresh face who hasn't been in the Senate too long, who looks telegenic, and he says a few things, and it sounds good. But, you know, with Marco Rubio, it's literally you're looking at his back and pulling out the disc that he keeps repeating over and over. Whatever's on that disc, he keeps saying over and over again. If you take that disc out, he's lost. The establishment is gone. Jeb Bush is not going to make it. John Kasich will not make it. He's a nice guy, John Kasich, but he's just not going to make it. Ben Carson has ruled himself invalid. It's down to the three. Donald Trump, Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz. But if it's just those three, Donald Trump continues to win 34%. It's going to be 34, 35%, 22, and 22. That gets you up to about 80%. Where does the other 20% go? That's the key. Where is the other 20% to go? So we will see. On Wednesday, I'll be able to report and see where the Nevada caucuses go. It looks like Trump is going to win those in a landslide also. Caucuses are kind of hard to poll for, so we'll see what happens. On the Democratic side, which is also interesting this weekend, Hillary Clinton had a much-needed victory in Nevada, the caucuses. She beat Senator Sanders. It looked touch and go a few days before. In fact, the momentum seemed to be on Bernie Sanders' side. There was very much thought that Bernie Sanders was going to win that caucus, and where was that going to put Secretary Clinton? She would have tied in Iowa. She would have lost a huge – she would have had a huge defeat in New Hampshire by 20-plus points, and then she would have lost the Nevada caucus going into South Carolina. But Bernie would have had the momentum. He would have had the momentum to go into – South Carolina and say, see, I am the one. I am the one. But that didn't happen. Hillary Clinton won a big victory. Can Bernie continue to win? That is the question. That is the question now. He has been seen this last week and a half as he's tried to campaign in South Carolina to have an issue with securing a plurality. I won't say a majority, certainly not, but a plurality of the black vote. And is that important? It absolutely is important in the Democratic Party. It absolutely is. And there are issues that the black community want to have talked about, just like when the Republicans were in New Hampshire. you know, the opioid epidemic, the heroin abuse that is going on amongst the citizens in New Hampshire was an issue that they wanted to have talked about. And they want to have something done about it. And what they want to have done is they don't want these people thrown away now. They don't want them locked up in prison for heroin abuse. They want treatment. They want counseling. You know, 20 years ago was a different thing because the people looked different then. I've talked about that. When heroin abuse and crack cocaine were going rampant in the cities, and it was black and brown, lock them up, throw away the key. Now we have more people with this opioid epidemic and the heroin abuse. It's now we need treatment and job training and counseling. Understood. I hope that goes for everyone now, but it should have happened 20 years ago. So politicians do have to speak to the constituencies that they are campaigning in front of. You have to talk to the people you're campaigning in front of. So Republican can't go in front of the New Hampshire electorate and talk about what they want to do in the inner cities necessarily. If the inner cities include black people, if you're 95% white in New Hampshire, it's not going to go over. They want to hear something else. So Bernie Sanders has tried to go into South Carolina and went over some votes, and he has been somewhat successful with the younger black voter, the college age, early 20s voter who happens to be black. But his campaign rhetoric is not going over as well to the older voter, ones who are familiar with the Clintons from the 1990s. I've talked about this. I will continue to talk about this because it's important. I do understand that there has been, especially amongst the youth, black youth, that are very much for Bernie, which I have no issue with. Everyone gets to choose. We're a free country. You choose the person you want to vote for. But if the argument is the Clintons voted for that nasty 1994 crime bill that put so many people in jail, then you don't know your history. You absolutely don't know your history. You shouldn't even talk about that crime bill until you understand what was in it and who was voting for it and who was voting against it that wanted a different crime bill. But let me just give one statistic so that we kind of understand where we were, because it's hard in a vacuum to talk about how could they do this horrible thing and talk about super predators. They've kind of stuck that phrase on Secretary Clinton. She spoke about super predators in the 1990s. Once that. In the year 1990, in New York City, one city in America, there were 2,262 murders for one year. In 2014, the last year that was tabulated for the city of New York, the total murders in the city were 343. That's 1,900 murders difference over 25 years across the country, especially amongst on the East Coast and in the Midwest, and even at Los Angeles. In the 1980s and 1990s, with the drug epidemic, and you know, just noted drugs, the Reagan Metro, you know, the Nancy Reagan First Lady. Just say no to drugs, but if you don't say no, we're going to lock you up and throw away the key. There was a crime problem. We can talk about how we should have dealt with the drug issue, and you know, should they have been more counseling, not as much throwing them in jail. I understand that, and we can talk, and that's a separate argument. But another argument is, there were criminals on the streets. People were getting killed. Neighborhoods were being terrorized. Not just in New York, Philadelphia, Boston, Chicago, Baltimore, Miami, Dallas, Texas, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Las Vegas. This was Denver. This was all over the country. So there was a crime bill that was going to get passed in 1994, once Bill Clinton got in office. And part of the crime bill was an assault gun ban that since it sunsetted, the assault gun ban and that was in the crime bill in 94 was only to last for a certain amount of time. Then we're going to review it, and they have to reauthorize it. It didn't get reauthorized by President Bush around 2001, 2002. But that crime bill in 1994 was done with basically Democratic votes because they ran both houses of Congress at the time, the House and the Senate. And there was going to be a crime bill passed. If it wasn't going to be passed by the Democrats, it was going to be very much pushed by the Republicans. And we're talking Newt Gingrich, Dick Armey, Senator Jesse Helms, Senator Strom Thurmond. Ladies and gentlemen who were in your 20s, who were probably 2, 3, 4, 5 years old at the time in the 1990s, these were some rough folks, politically speaking. And if you think the crime bill was bad by the Democrat standards, and how did Senator Joe Biden, now Vice President, how could he sign that or vote for that bill? How could First Lady Hillary Clinton endorse it? How could Representative Sanders vote for that bill? It was because if they didn't vote for that bill, there was going to be a rougher one that was going to be Republican-backed. And then the same thing 2 years later with the welfare bill. Then, now at that time in 96, run by Republicans in Congress, because the Republicans won the House in 1994. So there's some revisionist history on the complaints about why we had a crime bill passed by that bad President Clinton and his first lady wife and the welfare bill of 1996. But we'll put that aside. Back to Bernie Sanders. Can he continue to win? It's going to be a challenge for him because of the diverse voters in the states that are coming up. We're no longer in New Hampshire and Iowa. We're now going to be in Michigan and Ohio and Alabama and Texas, eventually Florida, Mississippi. A lot more black voters. He has not shown a propensity of being able to get the vote of older black voters who do go to the polls more consistently. Another thing that Bernie Sanders has talked about is bringing new people into the process. That what is going to help in bringing about the change that he wants to bring, this revolution that he wants, is that we bring in more people to the process and we change the rules in Washington, we change the laws. Well, in order to do that, you do have to bring more people to the process. We also have to bring more voters to the process. And through these first three voting examples, Iowa, New Hampshire, and Nevada, there have been less people brought to the process. Bernie has had, and he specifically mentioned that he was disappointed in his caucus turnout for Nevada on Saturday. He was not happy with his turnout. Can he get turnout? He's getting great crowds. He's gotten the crowds. He's gotten bigger crowds than Donald Trump. But those people now then have to translate that enthusiasm to go to the speeches to then go vote. And he hasn't shown that yet. And then that's the absolute way that he is going to change things, because he cannot be elected president. One, if he doesn't get the votes. But two, even if he were to be nominated, he's got to change Congress. Got to win the Senate. The Senate is a closer bet to be able to win this year. You got to turn over about four or five votes. But you need to also at some point win the House. and the House is going to be a tougher draw. And I don't believe that someone like Bernie Sanders, with his politics and the things that he wants to do, this massive turnover of college tuition, making it free, which sounds good. I'm now reading some things about the historically black colleges, some of whom are of the 103 historically black colleges, I think a majority of them are private. If Bernie Sanders wants to make public colleges and universities free, would that be the end of HBCUs? So that's something that I'm going to have to look into a little bit more, but that is out there because, again, a lot of those HBCUs are private. Would people not go to those schools anymore if they can get a free tuition at a public university or public college? We also have to look at, and this has been going on, and listen, Bernie Sanders has a very passionate base of voters. Let's get real. The Republicans, if they had to pick who they would like to run against, yes, they would like to run against Bernie Sanders, the socialist. That's the way that they would smear him with that. They don't want to run against Hillary. They are not going to beat Hillary. I know that there have been polls taken back in a month ago that said Hillary would lose to Cruz, or she would lose to Rubio, and she would beat Trump, but Bernie would beat all three of them. That's January. That's like me saying in April that the Chicago Cubs are going to win the World Series, no doubt about it, and they're going to beat the New York Yankees in October. Really? We haven't played any games yet. How's that? That's what you bet on. But that's not the game. The games have to be played first. And within this politics, Bernie has to, first of all, he has to win these primaries and these caucuses. And then we'll see if he can get to the point of being able to match up against Trump or Rubio or Cruz. And that general election campaign, let's say if Senator Sanders were to be in it against, let's say, a Senator Cruz, who is a hard right conservative, I mean an extremely hard right conservative, I don't think he would win, because Ted Cruz is scary. He's much worse than Donald Trump. Donald Trump would be a much more difficult fight for Senator Sanders than Ted Cruz. Senator Sanders could beat Ted Cruz. I don't know if he could beat Senator Rubio. I just don't see him beating Donald Trump, because Donald Trump can pull some Democratic votes. People would be a little leery about a socialist. Be still leery about Donald Trump. You would see a third party. You'd see somebody else come in. You absolutely would. And I know there's still rumors about whether Joe Biden wants to jump in, but it's hard for me to see. And now, especially after Ms. Clinton's win in Nevada, how Bernie Sanders is going to be able to pull this out. It's going to be a long shot. He's had 20 years in Congress. I have not ever seen him speak, and I watched Bernie Sanders since the 1990s. I'm a C-SPAN junkie from the 90s, so I've seen him speak. His issue has never been anything to do with minorities. It's been what he talks about, the big banks, breaking up the big banks. Wall Street is a ripoff, and they're a fraud, and that's what he has talked about. Now, kudos for him for being consistent, but now, and I don't think Bernie Sanders, to be quite honest, let's say last June, right when Donald Trump came in the race and Bernie Sanders was just getting started, I don't think Bernie Sanders, June 2015, thought he'd be where he is now, February 2016. This has got to be a huge surprise to him that he caught on the way he has caught on. Congratulations to him. But part of that is having to change your campaign to embrace more people. He's going to have an issue with Latinos in terms of immigration. And he's having an issue with African Americans regarding what are your policies really about and do they include someone like me? One of the things African Americans have an issue with, and frankly, they've had an issue with our current president, President Obama, is this belief that a rising tide lifts all boats. There are a lot of African Americans who don't go along with that, saying, well, no, it doesn't lift all boats. We don't have a boat. So how is the rising tide, all it's going to do is drown me? They want the boat. So I can appreciate that there are some issues in the inner cities that are so totally underserved that need to be dealt with locally, not just by the federal government, but to turn these areas around, local control, families being more responsible. There's no doubt that it's a two-way street. But that there has to be some attention to making the schools better and building up the areas where people can work in their own communities. Everyone shouldn't have to travel 30, 35 miles to go to work every day. Is there ability for people to own their own businesses within their own community? Yes, absolutely. Is there something we can do about the schools? Yes. That is the kind of attention. And again, there's a great many people in the African American community who don't think this president, our current president, President Obama, has been attentive enough. That's why you can get someone like Donald Trump saying, I'm going to be better for the blacks than this president. He's been horrible. He loves the thing, the blacks. Like, the blacks, who are the blacks? I'm Kincaid. Who are the blacks? But you can get this type of thing being said by some of the Republicans, and it's been said for the last few years that this president has not been good for African Americans because there have not been enough improvement in the numbers. Youth unemployment, black unemployment up 50%? That's crazy. That's crazy. So it's things, and let me take a step back from being critical. Let's talk about this Congress run by John Boehner and now Paul Ryan that have done absolutely zilch to help this president with any type of policies, not only infrastructure, building, rebuilding bridges, streets, roads, but not doing anything in terms of jobs, not wanting to do anything in terms of jobs, making sure they don't do anything in terms of jobs in order to hurt this president and hurt the Democratic cause. That is an issue that is on the table, that things have not improved enough, even as things certainly are not where they were in late 2007, 2008, when we had the Great Recession. So Bernie Sanders has a real big chunk. He's got a big challenge in order to win this nomination, I believe. And then let me say, as I've talked about Bernie Sanders and I laid out his challenges and and congratulated him for running a great race, I do believe that Hillary Clinton would be the best president next president of the United States. I believe that she has shown that she can work with some Republicans. Some of them will not work with a Democratic president. They have shown that not only with President Obama, they showed it with her husband. And maybe she'll be able to use that against them. Come on, let's cut the silliness. You did it with us before. We're going to do it again. I think this email scandal is a bunch of nothing. Absolute nothing. Same thing Colin Powell, Condoleezza Rice, her assistants, her aides, used the same email. Emails that were sent out that didn't have any classification after the fact now they're classified as private. Come on. You know, just too much politics. I believe that she's the best person for the role. But both of these nominating processes are, they're about to really go into hyperdrive. Like I said, by March 1st, we're about to see some big going ons because the races are just going to be, you know, these first two or three, Iowa, New Hampshire, you know, you spend about a week in each state and really got time to talk to people. And this last week with Nevada and South Carolina, well, things are about to change now. Now they're about to speed up. And they're just going to go so fast that they're not going to have a lot of time to spend in any one particular state. And they're just going to go from one to another, boom, 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 boom. And if this race comes out, turns out to be Donald Trump against Hillary Clinton. 2008, we had a lot of people voting. We may break that record. We may break that record. So I will be back. Hour's over. I'll be back on Wednesday. We will see what happens with the Nevada Republican caucus tomorrow. I will talk about that then. I will come on Tuesday afternoon. Look forward to some great discussion about the politics and anything else that's going on in the world. Thanks for listening. Have a great afternoon. See ya.